You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Last year, Linda Gray published her first book, First Nations 101. She says the book contains tons of stuff you need to know about First Nations people. Linda Gray is a member of the Tsimshian Nation on the north coast of BC. She was born in Prince Rupert, but has lived in East Vancouver since she was 6 months old. She has a bachelor's degree in social work from UBC and is the executive director of the Urban Native Youth Association. Linda Gray joins me this morning in the studio to tell us about her book. Hello, Linda.
Hi.
Now, why did you decide to write the book?
Well, for the ultimate goal of trying to make life a little easier and to help our community recover from a lot of the devastation that's happened because of all these externally imposed policies and laws and, you know, assimilationist policies. So one was to educate non-Native people so that they have a better understanding of what the true history of this country is and what their ancestors' role or might have been, and so that they can look at our people differently and see what their role is in helping us to recover. And the other thing is for our own people, because many of us don't know what's happened. I mean, we know about residential schools, but we don't understand what that means on a day-to-day basis, how that has affected our lives. And that's why in the beginning of the book, I say how it's affected my life. I don't speak my language. I didn't grow up in my home territory. My mother died from addictions when she was young. I was a single parent, you know, on and on and on. And people don't realize that. So I really wanted to empower, especially our young people, so that they can have, you know, more opportunities and a better chance of living healthy and productive life.
Where and when were you in your life when you first kind of got the germ of the idea that this would be something you might want to do?
I was doing consulting, and I had started the Masters of Social Work program out at UBC, and I read Doug Cudahan's book, Tapway, and it was a series of his articles, and it kind of made me think, this is good, you know, these short pieces of information, and, you know, his was about maybe 10 different subjects or something, and I thought, you need something like this, but huge, and I remember I was on a plane to Ottawa at the time, and just thought, you know, I was really at that place where I wanted to, always thinking about community development and how do you make people change their attitudes, both within our community, outside of our community.
In the introduction to the book, you say that there's an upsurge of interest in First Nations issues right now. What do you pinpoint as being responsible for that kind of increasing interest among non-First Nations people?
Well, I think there's interest because of competition, so not a healthy interest. So things like fishing, when the fishing stock started to go down, then people wanted to know, well, how did Native people get their fishing rights, and what does that mean for us? Our treaties in this province, where only 5% of the land is actually treated. And then on the other hand, there's a lot of people, because of the stuff that's been coming out about the residential schools in the last 10 years or so, people are much more interested. You know, they kind of understand that, oh, some Native people are screwed up, as they say, for a reason, right? So they kind of want to know more. And then they see more of us in positive roles now. So a lot of people, you know, questions for me is like, well, how did it change for you? Or, you know, what needs to be done? So a lot of people are interested in, just from a humanitarian perspective, I would say.
You say in the introduction that when you mentioned to First Nations people that you had this project, this idea of writing the book, they would immediately suggest at least one of four burning issues that came up over and over again that had to be in the book.
Yeah.
What were those four issues?
Well, one is that we do pay taxes, and that's, again, with that whole competition thing, right? People want to know why we don't pay taxes, if we actually pay taxes, and everything else that they assume that we get for free. And it really is that they want to get rid of that idea, that stereotype that we actually get something for free. So very few of us get any of the benefits, in quotation marks, from being a status Indian, as they call us. But those of us that are due, it's really, I did a comic in the book that says, you know, all of the treaties and everything else and the unceded territories that are in BC right now are a down payment on, you know, future generations. It's all been bought and paid for. It's nothing, we don't get anything for free. In fact, we probably get maybe 1/10 of a percent of what we're actually owed, for lack of a better word.
So taxes was one of them, and then I think the other ones were, not all First Nations are the same?
Yeah, it's really, you know, diversity. Everyone thinks, I'm from the West Coast, so we have very unique culture, and everybody thinks, you know, we're all, you know, Plains Indians, and we wander across the plains. And
the feathers and the teepees and the,
yeah, for sure, and, you know, hunted buffaloes, but, you know, salmon, we're our buffalo over here, and we're longhouse people, and we have different everything. And in the book, I talk about how geography played a big part in that, right? And our languages are different. And BC has the most diverse language base in the, other than Oklahoma, where all of these native people were pushed into that area because of the Indian Wars down in the States. So it's really important for us, for people to not make assumptions about what they know about us because of what they've seen in a Hollywood movie. So that was really important for people.
And then another one that I want you to ask you to go into a bit more detail about is what people should refer to, what word people should use to refer to First Nations people.
Well, Indian is not a good one.
Indian's not a good one.
Yeah. In the States, that's much more prevalent because they tie it to their treaties a lot, so they claim it a little bit more than we do up here. Some Native people use that, but they use it within our own selves. And most of the time it's in a mocking kind of way, right? You know, oh, we're status Indian, you know, and even that word status brings up all kinds of things that aren't true.
How about Indigenous? How about Aboriginal? How about Native? There's all those ones floating around.
Well, that's the thing. And even in the book, I have a thing where it shows like 20 different things that I've been called in my life, right? You know, and I'm in my 40s. And really, it's always these imposed things that people are calling us. And right now, Aboriginal is the most widespread thing that they're calling us. And for me, I hate the word Aboriginal because it says it starts with ab, and almost every other word that starts with ab means not. So even though it may say something in the dictionary that's different, I think most people assume that it means not original, whether it's conscious or not. So I really don't like using that word.
So the term that you think you recommend people use is what?
First Nations, yeah, because we were the First Nations of this land, regardless of how people think we got here, whether we originated here or whether we came from somewhere else, which was the other thing I'll talk about in a second, is that we are the First Nations of this land, regardless. But you know, I'm a Simpson person, and that's first and foremost for me. I say Native a lot because I work for the Urban Native Youth Association, and really it's a little shorter than First Nations, but people, you know, get what I'm saying. Some people try to claim that Native, you know, if your family had been here for a couple of generations, they try to say, well, I'm a Native of Canada too, you know, which is ridiculous. They know exactly what they're saying, and it's always, you know, a little jab here, and, you know, you're not so special after all.
Well, let's look at the fourth issue, which you've already alluded to, the where First Nations came from. So the last of those four burning issues was, talk to them about the land bridge theory.
Yeah.
So what is it with the land bridge theory that's problematic? Let me just explain. This is a theory that First Nations came from Siberia during the Ice Age, when the ocean level dropped and there was a land bridge between Asia and North America, and people came through that way. What's the problem with that?
Well, for first thing is that it gets changed every few decades. Right now they're saying, well, no, there's no way we could have came through the ice corridor. So even though they've been saying this for 30, 40 years, that this is the gospel, this is the absolute truth, we know that they came from there. Now after 30 or 40 years of people saying, yes, that is true, now they're saying, oh, no, that couldn't have happened. You know, our science is wrong. So they probably came by canoe around, you know, two continents. We came by canoe. And first of all, people say it because it's about competition. They want to prove that we weren't here first so that they don't have to deal with land claims, that they don't have to worry about, you know, our ancestors that are buried across Turtle Island, which is another name for North America that we call. So, you know, there's just so many. When we came here, because I wrote a little comic about it in the book too. You know, I show this guy who comes and he talks about Anthroman. Anthroman says that, you know, everybody, okay, we're here now. Now everybody spread out, form your own nations, form your own creation stories, and make your own language. And just in case somebody comes here someday and says that we weren't the first people here. Like, how is that, you know, as an oral people, would I have you know, disrespected my ancestors who have passed down our creation stories for generation upon generation upon generation for, you know, since time began, would I then say, oh no, actually, you know, we came from here rather than we migrated from somewhere else? That just goes against everything that our people believe.
Because there's no reason that that story wouldn't have been able to be passed down, right? I mean, if that were in fact the case, then that would be part of the stories that people came. We came here and we found this land. And
yeah, for sure. And we wouldn't have all split up and like developed all of these different languages. Like, there's absolutely no purpose in that. So it's really a slap in the face for us, for people to tell us where we came from when our own stories tell us where we came from.
Now, as you mentioned before, the book that had inspired you had a lot of little subjects, so just a few pages on a lot of different subjects. Well, no, that book, not so many, but your book, a lot of different subjects.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that you talk about is the residential school apology. And then you talk about the federal government's apology as one of the key moments that you say that brought the First Nations issues to the forefront. What kind of commitment has the federal government shown since that apology?
I actually don't think they've showed any commitment. You know, they said that they understand that why there's intergenerational effects and that the burden has been ours for too long, and in a real way that the government of Canada and Canadians will walk with us during this time of recovery. That has not happened. The very next year after the apology, they cut funding to the National Residential School Survivor Society. They cut funding to the Aboriginal Healing Foundation. And these were both very significant national organizations that were helping our people to bring about the truth and to recover from what, you know, a legacy that went on for 150 years or 130 years. So, and since that time, a lot of other Native funding has been cut. And it just goes on and on. You know, the Native Women's Association of Canada, what happened to them when they promised that they were going to have this money to continue their work? And then all of a sudden, Rona Ambrose is up making an announcement that some's going to go towards RSMP, some's going to go towards this, and some go, you know, it's quite it goes against everything that they say.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a nice way to say it.
Yeah. Is it reasonable to say that some First Nations are survivors of the system and some are not affected by it? I mean, is it possible to separate people up into those two groups? Or, I mean, how do you see the legacy yourself in your own life?
Well, I think from community to community, no, you can't separate that all. Because what I say whenever I go and talk about this is that didn't happen to one family, one community, one province. It happened to every single Native community in this country. So it was an entire people for 7 or 8 generations that were, you know, they had to go to these schools from the time the children were 4 or 5 until they were 15, 16 years old, and experiences all kinds of abuses, including spiritual abuse, which people don't talk about, and then go home and then, you know, go to parents who had experienced the same thing, and then nobody was left to help recover from this, right? So, you know, not only were negative things introduced, but all of the positive things that we had, you know, in our cultures were strong spiritual cultures that were ceremonial based and connected to our ancestors and the land, was all taken away. So how do you, you know, then they throw us all back on the reserve. How do you recover as a people when there were some people who were taken into the bush and they were hidden and, you know, they weren't affected? So some of those people were able to help, you know, keep some of the stories and some of the ancient teachings alive and that sort of thing. But really, it's hard because when you have that happened to an entire people for 130 years, you can't say that there was many people who were not affected, including my own children.
Some of the subjects in the book you sort of set aside in a sidebar and you say, this is a rant.
Yeah.
You have a what you call a rant about gambling, which you oppose. You have another rant which called We Are Not Mascots. What sets aside a rant from the other part of the book?
I would say it's probably a little bit more just my opinion based and the ability to say to people, you know, this is just what the truth is. I'm not going to nice it up for you so that you feel comfortable with what I'm saying. I would say that's the main difference.
Okay. Now, this past Thursday, June 21st, was National Aboriginal Day. And, I have to admit to you that the only reason I noticed it this year was because I was reading your book. Mm-hmm. What do you think when you see this day go by year after year with so little media attention?
It's quite maddening. You know, if it was even if it was a national holiday, which I think it should be, people probably wouldn't know about it then. You know, as I say in the book, when you hear about Diwali all week long before that happens with the South Asian people, and you hear about the Chinese Lunar New Year for weeks ahead of time, which I think is fantastic. I celebrate everybody's culture and their right to it, and we should all participate and, you know, honor each other's cultures. But when you blatantly ignore the first people of this land's culture, who are, you know, in the Constitution, who have deep, deep roots to this land and have contributed so much to this country and can, you know, continue to, that they're blatantly ignored, it's disgusting is what it is. And even the other day, there was a march that went up to Trout Lake along with the celebrations. And the CBC, they took footage of it, but then they attributed it to some other unrest that will happen in the summertime about treaties. And we're just like, well, it was actually about funding cuts that were happening to Native youth programs around Vancouver, 14 programs that have been cut. So when you have media, and it's CBC, I was surprised that this is what happened. So it looks like that march was about treaties, when in fact it was about a celebration of National Aboriginal Day, as well as tagged on, you know, a protest about these cuts that have come.
My last question is about questions. And you have a section titled Appropriate Questions to Ask a First Nations Person. Tell me about that.
Well, what I talk about in the book is that we don't know everything. And a lot of it is because of what's happened in our community. So nobody should assume that we know everything, you know, because people are like, oh, well, what about the Indiana Act, or what about treaties, and what about this, and what about that? Well, I kind of know a lot of it, but, you know,
you must after writing the book.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't know that. And, you know, because a lot of our people are just struggling to survive, and we're struggling to relearn our own cultures, you know, so we don't know about maybe the Constitution Act, or, you know, what the different phases of the Indian Act, or that sort of stuff. So first, people should not assume. Second, they should ask respectful questions. You know, somebody, I was in a bakery once, and some guy came up to me and he goes, what's with that blockade up in the Fraser River there? And I'm like, I don't know, I'm not from the Fraser River, you know. And he just kind of looked at me and almost insisted that I answer the question. And I said, I have no obligation to you to answer that question. If you had asked it respectfully, I might have answered it. And then I just left, because, you know, people, that's usually what it is. It's hot button issues. They want to know about, okay, treaties, why do you guys get that? And, you know, do you pay for taxes? And it's not like they're really trying to have a conversation. It's, you know, demanding an answer. And, you know, why do you get that? So it's more kind of accusatory things rather than trying to understand us as a people and how we might interact together and how, you know, we all live together peacefully in our country.
What would an appropriate question be?
You know, what can I do? How can I help get past this whole residential school? You know, how can we contribute to the community? You know, anything like that, that actually shows that you care about it. Or even, you know, what nation are you? You know, understanding that there's a nation, and, you know, what would it take to have this happen or that happen? Something that's positive, not some of the negative stuff that we hear quite often.
Well, it's been great to talk to you this morning, Linda, and I really recommend people to pick up a copy of the book and read it.
Yeah, they can pick it up all over town and as far as Winnipeg right now, and I'll be traveling to the Word on the Street Festival in Toronto in September. But they can check out my website, FirstNations101.com, to order directly from me or to find out where to buy the book.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks.
I've been speaking with Linda Gray. She is author of First Nations 101. And as she said, you can order the book online through the website firstnations101.com. Or if you prefer the bricks and mortar kind of experience, the website has a list of bookstores that carry it, including People's Co-op Books on Commercial Drive, the Museum of Anthropology and the UBC Bookstore or other locations, and Kids Books on West Broadway.